This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Just kind of recap the meeting for us. How are you feeling now that we have meeting two under your belt?
Well, with regards to the task force itself, it's accomplished a lot of work. Our partners with the New York State Department of Labor and Workforce Buffalo have been assisting individuals, whether they are applying for unemployment benefits, seeking additional jobs. Some people have already been hired. Individuals are in training programs in which the training is covered by Workforce Buffalo and the New York State Department of Labor. So I'm happy about that end. I think we're still a little surprised that out of 1,000 that were affected, only 320 or so have actually applied for unemployment benefits. But it could also be because they're working. We do know that there are others that are working, and you do not get unemployment benefits if you are employed. But the impact on the community has not been as great as people feared. But we are concerned about not only individuals who haven't found a job, but also the future of the site. As was discussed in the meeting, a request for proposals was put out on the street by Invest Buffalo Niagara, paid for by New York State, to basically work with site selectors and others to determine the best and possible use to get a major economic new facility there. And next week they'll actually have all the responses in, and hopefully by our time in our April meeting they'll actually have picked a partner to work with. Things are moving along. We still are very saddened that Sumitomo announced its closure, but it certainly has not had the massive economic impact negatively that we had feared. But no matter what, we're going to continue to help those who lost jobs and figure out a way in which we can ensure that that facility gets its best use in the future with many more people employed there in future decades.
As leaders sort of jump into that RFP process, as those start rolling in, what are some of the main factors in decision-making for those? I mean, is it jobs? Is it how much of that site can be used by a particular company?
Well, talk a bit about that. The RFP is to basically, it's not for like somebody bidding on the property. It's to get us a partner in the real estate industry who's got plenty of experience dealing with large-scale site turnover like this. So what we want to ensure is that we find a partner who has experience. It could be a local partner, it could be a national partner, but has a lot of experience dealing with like these types of facilities once they close, and finding the right parties to come in the future so that the site doesn't become vacant and nothing happened, or let's say a data center takes it over, which uses a lot of electricity, a lot of water, very noisy, but hardly creates any jobs. Our goal is to find partners in the future that are going to create jobs at that site. So first we have to work with a real estate company, and once the RFP process is decided, we'll basically have that. And it'll be a company that's experienced in economic development and the renovation of an existing site that is as large as this. If it's a small little 1-2 person firm, it's probably not going to work. It's got to be one that's got national experience in dealing with a giant site like Sumitomo. And then from there, we'll go out there and try to acquire the site. Right now, we don't own it. Sumitomo does. So we're going to need to work with Sumitomo to acquire the site, which I think we'll be able to do. But it's going to still take some time to do that.
Given what's happened in North Tonawanda with the DigiHost plant, I know that in the meeting you had said that discussions were in Washington about the negatives of a data center, but does what's going on in North Tonawanda with the DigiHost site kind of have an influence in that with what's going on with the Sumitomo plant?
Yeah, one thing I never really wanted in Erie County was data centers, and there's a few data centers in Niagara County, and when they were first announced, I think people were very hopeful they would create a lot of jobs. But that's not what's happened. They haven't created a lot of jobs, but they create a lot of noise. They create a lot of problems in the community. They use a tremendous amount of electricity. I don't think people truly understand that these data centers and these crypto mines and so forth, they use a ridiculous amount of electricity. And what we're concerned about is because that site in Sumitomo has a high electrical load to begin with. It has the ability to handle high electrical needs. We just want to ensure that it's a company that's going to be using it to create jobs in our community, not just mine for crypto.
And then Zach mentioned too, there's three parties interested right now. I know there's an NDA involved here, but does that give you some hope here with getting the ball rolling?
Well, we can't talk about particulars associated with any party that's interested in the site, but knowing that they are interested is important, because what you often see when, like, there's a closure on a site, they put a sign on it, they hire a real estate firm, and there's a sign on it saying, if you're interested, call this number, and there's never any interest. So we know that there's going to be interest in the site because of the what's going on in upstate New York with regards to Micron's construction of this massive new chip fab company or facility in the Syracuse area. We've already seen spinoff of it here with Edwards Vacuum. We're going to continue to see spinoff, and what these companies that are in the tech hub industry want is they want a site that has high electrical needs, has water access, because they often need water access for cooling purposes for their production. So the site has it, and we're not surprised to see that there's interest in the site. But once again, we don't own the site. Neither the county nor the state owns it, and we have to acquire it. Sumitomo is still going to be in there through at least October. But knowing that this process is moving forward, it gives me a little comfort, because if we had no interest in the site, that would concern me. But we have multiple parties that are interested in the site, and I feel 5 years from now, this is a multi-year process, but 5 years from now, I feel like there's going to be a party in there doing work associated with the tech hubs in New York. And that's a good thing, because as I mentioned in the meeting, there's never a great time for a closure. You don't want people to lose jobs. But if this was to have happened, it's better it happened now than 5 years from now, 5 years from now, or 5 years ago, because we're in a much better position because of the strength of our economy and the coming tech hubs to upstate New York.
Off topic, can we get your reaction on not being able to access the funds provided by the Forestry Service for the trees?
We announced, and it was noted in local media, that Erie County and the City of Buffalo have been denied access to a grant with regards to the planting of trees, a tree grant, a multi-million dollar grant affecting both communities. This appears to have been part of the cuts associated with the Trump administration. Not only can't we access the grant, because we've spent money, this is a grant where you have to spend money and then you get reimbursement back from the federal government. Not only can't we access the portal, because it's been shut down for the tree grant, our representative from the U.S. Forestry Service has been laid off. So I fully expect that this means this grant is dead. We're looking at various options with regards to pursue the federal government for the lost revenue. And we're also looking at options with regards to whether or not we can force the federal government to keep the grant. This is just one of other, there's multiple ones that you're going to be hearing of in the near future that we're dealing with. In Washington, D.C. was one of the biggest discussion points is, can the Trump administration just arbitrarily cut grants or services it doesn't like that have already been approved and appropriated by Congress? And the general view is, no, they can't. But you got to go to court to prove that. So it's something that we're looking at. I'm not yet in a position to make a determination as to whether or not we're going to file suit with regards to this. We are concerned about some social service assistance, some senior service assistance, Department of Energy assistance that may be lost. And we're just learning each day as it goes by. But the big one we're really worried about is, what's the impact going to be on Medicaid? The budget that was just recently passed by the House requires $880 billion in cuts over a 10-year period in one committee, which is the primarily Medicaid. If they got rid of every other service that's provided by that committee, every other program, they still wouldn't even have halfway up to the amount of money that they have to cut. So the expectation is Medicaid is going to be severely impacted, but we just don't know the impact yet. So with all of these federal impacts, there are individuals' lives who've lost jobs. There's families that are having problems now because they lost their income. And for our community, if this grant is dead, I don't see how the county is going to be able to do it on its own. It's a great idea, but it's not something we can afford to pay on our own.
Just really quick, back on topic, question from the newsroom. Out of curiosity, does any announcement of the tariffs have any impact on this process or interest?
The announcements of the tariffs have certainly had a huge impact. You saw the president pull back on the tariffs with regards to automobiles. It's good for this region because there's a significant amount of supply from both Ford and GM that goes across the border to be assembled in our region. So that I'm glad to hear that. But the tariffs are a double-edged sword. They're going to hurt people in the short run. When I say short run, I'm talking about years. You may see a benefit a decade or more down the line. But I'll give you a good example of it. Timber and lumber. Approximately 50% of the timber, at least on the East Coast, that's used in construction comes from Canada. So the lumber that we use in construction projects in this area, about half of it comes from Canada. You increase that by 25%, you now increased all construction costs. Could you theoretically rebuild the lumber industry in the United States? Yes, but you got to plant trees. Which is kind of funny because we're talking about the tree grant, but you got to plant trees, and it takes decades for those trees to grow to the height that's necessary so you can start using it for lumber. So maybe you could repatriate a lumber industry for the entire United States, but it's not going to happen in a few years. It's going to take a long time. So the tariffs are already starting to have an impact. We're seeing a tremendous impact with regards to the not so much on tariffs per se, but the amount of Canadians who are not coming across the border. All you got to do is look at the Peace Bridge, at Queenston and Lewiston Bridge, and realize Canadians are not spending their money in the United States. They're not shopping in our malls. They're not flying out of the airport like they had planned on it. They're angry. They're mad. And it's quite apparent they feel that betrayed is the word I heard. I met with members of the Canadian Embassy staff at a meeting at the Canadian Embassy, three nights ago now. And they're not angry at us locally. They understand we're friends, but they feel betrayed by the United States. And that's something I don't think any of us ever thought that we'd be talking about, is Canadians feeling betrayed by the United States. But they're our longest serving ally. They're our number one economic partner, bounces back and forth between Canada and China. So either number one, 1A, or 1B, let's call it. And they feel betrayed because of these tariffs that are having a short-term impact, but may long-term maybe come up with some benefit.
We're not seeing any like tariff impact on the Sumitomo process.
On the Sumitomo process, no, because there's really we're so early in the ball game. I think I was here last time and I said we're in the first inning. We may be now in the bottom of the first, top of the second. Yeah, but we're certainly not in a situation where it's so far along that the tariffs will have hurt the potential use of Sumitomo's buildings in the future.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.